This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. It is hard to believe that 2017 isn't Beethoven's anniversary. He was born in 1770, that's 247 years ago. He died in 1827, and that's 190 years ago. 247 and 190 aren't particularly celebratory numbers. But this year alone, in the Klang Valley, several concerts have been organized around this most famous and influential of composers. This weekend alone, there are two concerts, one by Ying Chi Music and the other by the MPO, and both will be performing Beethoven's Ninth. This afternoon, I have Elaine Pao of Ying Chi Music here with me, and she's accompanied by Ang Mei Fong, who will be the featured soprano in the performance of the Ninth. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone.
Big performance, the Ninth. Everybody calls this with like the glorious Ninth, the mighty Ninth.
Yeah, really.
So on your shoulders must sit a great weight.
This is monumental. I think the Ninth Symphony, it has got all the thoughts from Beethoven. You could say that actually it's very simple. It's just about love. It's just about true love. A love that could make us be joyful. But this is complicated, yeah.
For a piece like this, though, especially in the context of how you are presenting it, the holy Beethoven, the compassionate Beethoven, the hopeful Beethoven, how do you prepare for a concert like this? Is it a matter of studying the technicals? Where where's the crescendo? Where is the fortissimo and where is the pianissimo?
Well, of course, we always start from the technical things, you know. You need to know your tempo, you know your notes and know them well, and you put your voice into it. So that's always the first step. And then you look deeper into the work itself. So you study the text. So what does it say? What does it convey, actually, you know, the hidden meanings inside? And when you study the text, it kind of connects you with the historical context, you know, and also the life, the era Beethoven was living in, the things that people are celebrating. For example, you know, that's the age. The classical period, end of classical period, is the modernization period of European history. So they're actually...
The industrialization.
Modernization is like the beginning of the modern world. Mm-hmm. People going into different kind of settings, you know, people have different kind of thinking. And at this time, because publications are getting wider,
more provision,
more, yes. So people get all this access to printed books, you know, and people are so thirst and eager to chase for knowledges and all. Mm. And also people gather around each other, you know, people from different regions are getting known to each other. And that's the era, what we call the Age of Enlightenment. Mm. You know, people start to know and wanted to celebrate fraternity, you know, equality, and all these kind of big things, yeah.
Big ideas,
you know, tend to pull people together. So I think Beethoven Ninth, it celebrates a lot of monumental moments in human history. So one is this, mm-hmm.
But how does that inform you, Mei Fong? As a performer, you'll be singing this piece. And like you say, here's a period where the world has become more open. Travel, books were more available.
Yeah.
Because of travel, people got to know other cultures.
Yes.
I guess when we're talking about this, we're talking in a confines of European cultures.
Yes, European culture. Yeah. Not that worldwide yet.
Yes. So from that perspective, how does that inform how you perform and how you prepare for this piece?
I think first is that I was touched, you know, by this idea. And that kind of idea is very bright, you know. Yeah, and it is just full of energy and it's hopeful. It gives you so much hope, yeah? And so that when you put yourself into that moment and you feel like, wow, you know, I want to be en route, you know, on the same route, you know, giving hope to people and then while giving
this energy. So it's all joyful.
It's joyful. Of course, you also understand the struggles inside because it doesn't only talk about joy, but it talks about so many things inside. So you walk through those moments, you know, with the things and you know that if you put that into our moments now, like our daily lives, like, it's the same thing, you know. It's whether it is like 200 years ago or 100, how many years ago, you know, until now, you're also celebrating the same things. You're also struggling, you know, in the lives.
So we as human beings have not changed.
As human beings
have
not
changed. Struggling with the same issues. Yes. We're celebrating the same causes.
Yeah, we're also experiencing struggles and we're also experiencing
same
celebrations
joy.
And joy and all that. Yeah. Yeah, so I think how this works reminds you of hopefulness, I think. And that is something that really connects to my soul, I would say. Mm. Yes.
I think it's essentially the humanity that he was trying to convey or express. And more than that, the humanity and divinity that he knew of, that he understood. And that's even a greater hope, a more definite direction.
Yeah.
How does music communicate this sense of the divine? Music for many of us is sounds, and it is whether it's pleasing or not pleasing, whether it's cacophony or whether it's musical or not musical. But how does music communicate the divine?
Maybe some people will say it's subjective. Yeah, it's very subjective. You hear it, you feel it, you found your way. But I have my different way. So we will not say that there's only one way. And that's to express music, to connect music with divinity, or even not to talk about that these supreme level, but just talk about humanity. There are different ways that we express ourselves. To me, what I think is music is not something that is feelings, not just that. That could be a layer. That could be a layer that is the easiest or more accessible to everyone. But music, actually, each sound projects your thoughts about all the theory working behind music, behind the sound. So if you think, for example, 4-4 time, four counts, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, that's 4-4 count, and I'm not going faster, I'm not going slower, so I'm perfectly right. Yes, but what if it's a 4-4 time and it's a march? Then you can't feel the 4-4 count as 1, 2, 3, 4. You won't be able to march. You've got to feel it 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah? And then what if this 4-4 count is expression of your sorrow? Then you can't feel it like a march. You have to... A sorrow also has got many levels. So if it's just 1, 2, 3, 4, that could be a level of it. But if it's deeply, deep sadness, 1, 2, 3, 4, it has got something to do with speech. How do you express your feelings and your thoughts, your understanding, with words? Now, take away those alphabets from the words. It's sound. And put sound in the setting of meters, high and low, tempo, and it becomes music. I always share with my friends that what we hear goes straight to our brain. And I think our ears, our hearing function, is the closest to our inner brain. They have a very, very intimate connection between how we think and what we hear. I think so.
So as somebody who will be conducting these concerts, how do you prepare?
Well, as Mei-Feng just shared, it's the basic things. First of all, definitely, I have to know the notes. I
know the score, study the score.
Yes, study, really study all the parts or instruments. And technically, basically, we have to think of, we have to know for very sure what we want first.
What the conductor wants.
What the conductor wants in sound. And then the next step we'll think of what will be the most probable difficulties or problems these instruments or the singers or the choir members would have when they come to this part. And I have to pre-think of a remedy. or suggestion for them to do it right. And then I have to think of myself whether I'm able to give them a clear signal, because I can't speak during the performance. It's all in the gesture. But I can't be too fully involved physically in the gesture, because that will make it unclear. So there are a lot of things that I need to balance myself. I have to pre-think a lot of things first and then think of how I should do it. But after all this, then I have to come to Beethoven, because this is not Mozart. This is not Haydn. It's Beethoven. So I have got to know a little bit more about Beethoven, how he reacts to different things, whether he was really quick-tempered or whether he was actually very frustrated by a lot of misunderstanding around him of himself. So I try to have the compassion, have to feel it, feel what he felt. So actually the past few months, some friends commented that I'm much too obsessed by Beethoven. Yeah, because I have been thinking all the time of how he would respond to this, how he would respond to that. Yeah, and because that will help me to get into looking at the page of the scores, the music, how he would want this forzando to sound like. Yeah. How he would want this long phrase to feel like. How he would want this and that. Yeah, and that's why.
You ask yourself the question, how will Beethoven play this? How will Beethoven interpret this? My question is, how do you get inside Beethoven's head?
Yeah, I have to surrender. I have to surrender. I don't think anyone would.
I'm speaking with Elaine Pao of Yingqi Music, that has organized two Beethoven concerts, one this Saturday and one the following Saturday. And with her is Ang Mei Fong, who is the lead soprano, or who is the featured soprano. Coming up, more about Beethoven and his music, and I want to find out a bit about his life that informs his music and the connection between music and spirituality. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Hing, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are tuned to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Hing. While 2017 is not an anniversary year for Beethoven, 2017 will yet see more of the celebration of this composer. This weekend, two groups are performing Beethoven's Ninth. Next weekend, one of these groups, Yingqi Music, continues with Beethoven's Missa Solemnis. And with me in the studio are the folks from the Yingqi Productions, Elaine Pao and Mei Fong. Just now, you were talking about how you prepare. In the course of your conversation, you mentioned something about how music communicates.
Yes.
When you use that analogy about speaking to each other, take out the words, then you follow a certain rhythm, putting it into meter, and then the highs and the lows and all that. And then suddenly, we have music. Does that mean then we really don't need to be trained to listen to music, to have music affect us?
Okay. I think before Mei Fong is going to share something on this, I would say there are different levels of listening. First, yes to your question. That is, you don't have to be trained to listen to music, and even to great music, because you could feel what he's trying to express. But you have to be a person that you are so used to listening acutely to conversations, to communications, yeah? So if you are not one of those, you are one that is so trivial and blah, 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 you probably won't get it.
I can hear objections to this. I can hear the consequence of this, of what you're saying. So if you don't like classical music, means you really aren't a good listener.
No. I'm not saying that. No. But just that maybe you haven't tried. Because I have met a lot of friends. they could be like someone who will not be into classical music, very trendy, and they don't conversate with you deeply on things, because those are very personal and very subjective. But once they have come to classical music, and if it clicks to their heart, if it clicks to their understanding, just not a very deep one to understand the structure or what, but they still could feel the difference in sound, the differences in tone, in tempo, that just if they focus. And they also told me that music helped them to be focused. So it's not just that they have to be focused, but it will help them to get focused, and then they will get more things from their listening. So another thing is, I would also give a no to your question, because for musicians, we are trained to analyze the music, the way they are written, the composition, the form, the melodic structure, the rhythmic structure, harmonic structure. And those actually helped us.
So you hear more?
Yes. We should understand a bit more of what he was trying to say, especially the historical part that we understand of him, of the composer. Because that period, his way of doing this may not be a common practice. And since he's doing this, wow, that's a very innovative act, and it might not be appreciated by the contemporaries. It might be appreciated by those very aggressive ones. Up to now, 200 years almost, and we think that sound is okay, nothing so aggressive.
Partly because with the passing of time, we've had time to reflect on it, time to study it, and then suddenly somebody who can articulate well what he was trying to do, they help us understand it.
Yes, you know? Yes.
Yeah. And maybe also I think now the listening experience or that expectation is slightly different now. You know, after all this popular music that we have in the market, they are shorter. You know, easier to appreciate, you know, in a way. Uh-huh. You know, just like if you're reading a novel or if you're reading just like short stories. You know, like short stories is like more pleasing to more people, you know.
Shorter attention span.
Things like that. So, well, anyway, I think this is a big debate and is a big question that people have been really thinking and talking about that throughout, you know, the history even. Well, first, classical music in general is longer. You know, like four movements. You really need to pay attention to that. It's just like you're walking, you know, into something, a big story, and you need to follow from the first chapter to the end to be able to understand the whole thing. You know, one of the conductors he once said that it's difficult to appreciate classical music. First is that you need to have a very good hearing memory. You know, so after we look at things, we have this visual memory, so we kind of like know where you stand, and then you know where to go, you know, within that structure. But hearing memory, a lot of us do not have a hearing memory. So once you go into first chapter, you kind of like lost some of the elements, and you lost, you know, who was that? The name of the person just now, you know, in the novel, is that Emilia? Uh-huh. You know, or someone? And sometimes when we're reading novel, you know, when characters
Russian
are getting,
names.
Like when characters are getting more, then you're kind of like lost in it. Yeah. So I think we are not really good in that, a lot of people, especially now that we are more used to shorter stories. So that is one of the reasons why a lot of us think that classical music is not easy to appreciate. And American composer and conductor Aaron Copland, he once wrote a book, What to Listen For in Music. You can still get it in Kinokuniya. I got mine there. Yes, and he actually described listening to music into three different layers. Okay, the first layer is the most surface, you know, where people are listening to music like background music. So it doesn't actually stop your daily work. You just have some music there. You're not really paying attention to it, that kind of hearing experience. The second layer is that you really sit down and start to capture some of the elements, yeah? And you know that there are structure in the music, and then you know that you are walking from one place to another. And that's the second layer. And then the third layer is the layer which is really deeper, and that was also what Elaine Powell was sharing. You need to know some musical knowledge in terms of letting you understand the music better. For example, the very basic thing. In a symphony, there are basic four movements. So you know you have four movements to expect. And in the first movement is usually in a, for example, like sonata form. So you know that the elements are repeated, A, and then go into a development, and then it recaps again in the end. You need to know some things like this. And then you can go deeper to know the harmonical structure and everything, you know, that Elaine just shared. That is what Aaron Copland was trying to say.
We hear, but we can hear more.
We can hear more.
As we become more educated or as we search to learn more about it.
Yes.
Now I want to go back to the comment that you made when you said you are preparing to conduct this piece of music, that you said you try to get into the mind of Beethoven. How would Beethoven phrase this? How would Beethoven express this? What do you have to do to get there? Do you have to read his biography, read about his life, and find out at this juncture when he composed this piece of music, and which he often himself played, right?
Yes, yes, he
except
performed.
When he got so deaf that he couldn't do it.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So you do read up his history and biography.
Yes, we have to. Right, we sure do. Because that is one way for us to get to understand that person. Also, the letters during those period of time. Because, well, we don't do it for contemporary composers yeah. now because we don't write letters anymore.
Hard to track email.
Email, yeah. So their letters to friends, to their close friends or family members, they would actually open up their hearts and make some comments of things in the letters. And then you will, that's how he see this, how he looked at that thing and what he's into now. But even those, I have asked myself this question. That is, after I have made all these studies, so what? So now, what do I do? Okay, I understood why he is reacting to this matter in that way. So, what does it do to me? Would that change perspective of his music and how should I deal with it? It takes some time. It does. It does. Because it's a matter of whether your understanding has gotten into a level to your own understanding of things, even without words. I am trying very hard to convey myself.
I can see what you're trying.
You can see.
I can see what you are... where you're trying to take me to, that at some juncture, after reading the scores, reading the words,
yes.
you have to, for a lack of a better word, internalize this music and mix it with your own worldview of who you are. At the end of the day, it is a kind of a communion with the score, with what you know, and how you see the world.
Yes, yes. Just a very simple example. I think I have changed, you know. I think I have changed at least a little bit. For example, like a sforzando in music. A sforzando sign will mean a sudden force. When I was studying music, that was N years ago, when I saw that, I would just, give it more force. Yeah, at that point. But I couldn't feel why I have to do that. I couldn't feel the meaning of doing it. I couldn't feel after I have done that or before I come to this forzando, am I ready for it? Or do I have to be ready for it? It was just a spontaneous thing. And then what does it do to myself after the forzando, after many years? And now I'm gradually into it. A forzando always mean different things to me now, even under different composers. So for Beethoven, the sforzando is really sforzandos. I looked back to his music. Oh, I have missed so many sforzandos that he often put into the music. Yeah. So in the music, when I search for the right or, well, there's no right sound, to be very frank. Yeah.
What is right for you at that moment?
Yes. I not only have to look at this piece, I looked at his other works. His piano sonatas, his string quartets, his Lieder. Well, I have to mention that in July, I have very good experience, I think 2 months before that, to work together with Mayfeng on the Beethoven's Lieder concert recital. Oh, that time really was very inspiring, I think.
Same for me.
Yeah. So all these different points, perspective for me to get into
like
Beethoven's heart.
Yes. For me as well.
Yes.
Now, this Saturday's concert, you'll have the Piano Concerto number 4 and then
the Symphony number 9.
Are you playing the whole Symphony number 9 or just the 4th movement?
The complete symphony. The complete, and I have to clarify, I'm not conducting the Symphony number 9. We have invited the conductor, the resident conductor of KLPAC, to conduct.
Lee Kok Leong.
Yes. He is the conductor. Very young conductor. Now, talking about what I've shared, it sounds like I have to be pretty old to be able to get into the music and get something out of it. But I think at every different levels, yeah, we do grasp different things in our hands. And I am excited to see this young conductor dealing with this symphony with a big group of Malaysian fine musicians.
What is the movement of this piece of music, the 9th? Is this, in a way, his spiritual journey?
Well, the first movement, I think, is a very sturdy that he's out and say, come on, listen to me. I will share this with you. And what do we expect? The struggles, the questions, getting lost on his own pathways. That's in the first movement. And it's a 4-4 time, strong, tough. Second movement is very abnormal because normally in a symphony, second movement is a slow movement. Very expressive, beautiful, slow movement. No, it doesn't do that yet. It switches around the second and third movement. So second movement, the scherzo. Quick, triple time, almost like one to a bar. Very quick time, quick tempo. And it sounds like he's sharing his joy, but interrupted. Interrupted sometimes by a very abrupt, timpani, aggressive rhythm. Also interrupted by different ideas, musical ideas. But that's his experience of human joy. And then the third movement. Wow, this slow movement is so beautiful, so sensitive.
Sublime.
So sublime, so intimate. I mean, it will change your concept of who Beethoven is. You would never expect he is such a gentle man at heart.
Because we think of him as this fiery...
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Teenagers.
That's why the hair.
Yeah. Right. So that's the third movement. Beautiful. And the fourth movement, that is really gradually bringing up. The fourth movement, choral, yeah, and the Ode of Joy, with a very confused opening, actually, I think. Harmonically, it begins with a diminished chord. You wouldn't hear, wow, you would jump up from the chair. Wow, what is this? Are we beginning a new movement? And then the whole orchestra is like, hey, who should play? Now, I should. Oh, no, you should. Wow, it's almost like a confusion, but of course it's planned. Yeah, it's very well laid out. Yeah. And the themes of the first three movements will come in at the beginning of one phrase of that, just to remind you the whole picture of our life. And also one distinguished thing about the fourth movement is that it employs a low register sound of the cellos and the double bass to speak, not just sing. It's almost like the recitative in the opera. So this instrument will speak, but of course the tone, the rhythmic feel of it is German. Yeah, the speaking of a man. And then this will lead into the very familiar tune.
Joyous.
Yes, first very quietly. It's like it just began in your heart by the low instruments. I think it's very, very sublime. Although it's low, it's unison, no harmony. wow.
I mean, unusual as well.
Very, very unusual. You don't expect that in a symphony. And then gradually the choir comes in, and it goes higher, and the soloists, you'll be amazed of what the soprano could do.
Yeah, that's very high. That's very high.
Yeah.
Technically challenging.
Yes. Oh, she's doing fine. Very fine.
Sounds like a great concert to go to.
Yes.
It will be.
Two Beethoven concerts, one this Saturday, August 12th, and one next Saturday, August 19th, by the Yingqi Music Center, will be held at the Sekolah Rendah Jenis Kebangsaan Cina, Chung Wen Auditorium, Batu 4.5, Batu 4.5. Off
Road.
Jalan Oklang Road, Oklang Road or Jalan Klang Lama. And both concerts start at 8 p.m. This Saturday, the Piano Concerto No. 4 and Symphony No. 9. And then next Saturday, Beethoven's Missa Solemnis. Tickets are priced at $150 with concessions at $80. But if you purchase tickets for two concerts, then it's down to $200 and concessions at $120. Thank you both for coming in. Such a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.